From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it's time for Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. As we near the end of the year, actually 12 days and counting as of this live broadcast, it's a good time to reflect on what's happened during the past 12 months. And of course, the folks who are constantly writing the first draft of history are the journalists. Today, we have three journalists with us to help sort out the past year, in Kentucky at least. First up, we have with us Peter Baniak. Since 2009, Peter has been editor of the Lexington Herald Leader. He spent most of his career as a journalist at the paper, having interned there two decades ago. In 1992, while attending Northwestern University. After graduating with bachelor's and master's degrees, Peter spent a year at the Chicago Tribune before returning to the Herald Leader full-time in 1995. Peter joins us on the line from his office in Lexington. Welcome, Peter. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in the studio, Charles Compton and Stu Johnson. Charles is news director for the WEKU stations. He's a 30-year veteran of public radio who got his start in Ohio, spent time in Alaska, Idaho, and Washington State, and a number of years at Morehead State University before coming to WEKU in 2005. Charles has won many awards and is a board member of the National Organization of Public Radio News Directors. Hello, Charles.
Glad I finally got a chance to join you, John.
Thank you. Glad to have you here because you've been working on this program behind the scenes for weeks and weeks. And, of course, he's been a silent presence in our program. Stu Johnson has actually been on Eastern Standard in the last few weeks. Stu is a producer, reporter for WEKU, a position he's held for almost 30 years. Stu is a 1981 EKU grad, spent 3 years at the commercial station in town, WEKY, and has been here at WEKU since 1984. He covers Frankfort and Lexington City Hall, as well as many, many other stories in our region. Thank you, Stu, for being with us.
John, happy to be here today.
Let's get started on our conversation on the top stories of 2013. Always an interesting topic.
Oh, yeah.
We've asked the news department, Stu and Charlie, here to think about the major stories of this past year and put a little bit of order to it. And by the end of this hour, we would like to have our list kind of ranked, at least identify the top one, two, three, or more stories. And we'd like you to help out, you, our listeners, by telling us what you think are the most important stories of the year. And the email address to do that is wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Or you can go ahead and get on the phone line. It'll be a little bit before we put listeners on the air, but call in now, 800-621-8890. So, Charles, what have you guys come up with?
Well, like everything we do, it was kind of editorial, meaning Stu and I looked at put together a list of items that we felt like had an impact on our community, on our society. So for the most part, we eliminated acts of violence, accidents, that kind of thing. There was no
and
major.
Public radio in general, we don't follow the if it bleeds, it leads.
Right, because this list could have been twice as long as we came up with. But we'll give you our semifinalists, at least, at the top right now. And this is not necessarily in any ranking right now. This is just what Stu and I were able to brainstorm. Natural gas liquids, the Bluegrass Pipeline going through central Kentucky, all the plans for that and the response, the reaction, the protest resulting from that. Kentucky's health insurance exchange being launched in October, as well as the Medicaid expansion that the governor has authorized. We have several scandals that grew out of Frankfort this last year. Of course, we have the one that's currently underway, the accusations of sexual harassment by Representative John Arnold, the LRC's, the Legislative Research Commission's potential possible alleged part in that, and also Richie Farmer, former ag commissioner who pled guilty to deeds of misconduct while in office. The Affordable Housing Fund, Stu, that was one of the stories at the top of your list. It comes out of Lexington, a plan to promote low-income housing in the Lexington area. And one of the ones at the top of my list is the number of fairness ordinances that have passed this last year, discussions, debate over same-sex marriage out of Lexington, domestic partner benefits being awarded to city employees as well. A big one, of course, is the steady decline in coal and its environmental and economic impacts. We have, of course, preliminaries for the Senate race next year. Mitch McConnell, who, you know, it would seem very strong in Kentucky, is facing a challenge from within his own party, from the Tea Party, from Matt Bevins, a Louisville businessman. Also, Senator McConnell took some heat over helping to create a budget compromise earlier this year, played a part in the government shutdown as well this fall. And then we had the Democratic candidate come to the top, Alison Lundgren Grimes, and the debate over whether Ashley Judd, the actress, would be a good U.S. senator. The big debate year-long over hemp, whether it should be legalized, what the state of Kentucky can do to benefit from that, and to promote the legalization of industrial hemp. Major change in leadership in the state Senate. David Williams left, and we have Robert Stivers, a Eastern Kentucky Republican, taking over the state Senate, changing the dynamic there in a very significant way. Expanding gaming, especially coming at the end of the year, learning about all the budget problems that the state will likely face next year, expanding gaming is back on the table again. A major overhaul of Kentucky's penal code revision, that's something Stu Johnson covered a lot in Frankfort, and as a result, the shrinking prison population, but also the increase in need in around the state for drug treatment. We had major advances, progress made in a pair of bridge projects. Of course, the one in Louisville that's well along in the planning stages and the construction is beginning. And we have discussions on what to do about the Brent Spence Bridge that links Covington with Cincinnati, how to repair that bridge, how to replace it, that sort of thing. Major, major growth in Kentucky's automotive industry. I found out that Kentucky ranks number 3 in the nation now in the production of cars. $3 billion in exports, that's according to the governor's office. Redistricting was settled this year. That's something that was hanging over the legislature's head for over a year. And if we got time, the University of Louisville had a very good basketball season, and UK did not.
All right. This is a some list. That is, 15 stories?
Yes. We got our work cut out for us.
Excellent. Let's get Peter Baniak involved in the conversation. Any of those stories jump out for you? And, tell me, Peter, what you're thinking in terms of top stories for the year.
I think a lot of those are really good choices. I would say that, interestingly enough, you all didn't mention crime. I know you all said that that's not really your forte, but I think there were a couple of really high-profile crime stories, and one in particular that I would mention that brought a lot of national attention to Kentucky, and that is the shooting death of a police officer in Bardstown, Kentucky, which I think still hasn't been solved, but has been followed both statewide and nationally in many cases. I think one that you did mention that I'm particularly interested in, that I think is still an ongoing story, and actually somebody just mentioned on Twitter to me the changes in the coal economy in eastern Kentucky and the consequences that's having, this conference that just happened a few weeks ago, the SOAR conference in eastern Kentucky that brought 1,700 people out to talk about the future of Appalachia and in many ways moving beyond coal, I think is a fascinating ongoing discussion that I think is also going to be a really big story in 2014.
Peter, let's briefly, I'm not going to ask you to scoop your own paper, but tell us how the paper will approach the end of the year. I assume you'll have extensive stories, between Christmas and New Year's in terms of top stories of the year, and I guess there will be arts stories and maybe sports stories as well as general regional news.
Yes, of course. We always do that. Sometime next week, we will have a big piece about kind of the top stories as we see them. We'll also always, we'll run national stories about some of the top national stories of the year that, the Associated Press usually does, has a vote, an opportunity for people to vote about both national and the top state stories of the year. So we'll run those, of course, both on our website and in the paper. One thing that we're doing differently this year that I think is should be neat and something for people to look forward to now is on Christmas Day, we will have a special section in the paper that will be our photos of the year. The Herald Leader's photos of the year, our favorites, the ones that are most newsworthy, and the photos that really sort of stand out and tell the story of 2013. This is the first time. In the past, we've always run those kind of in dribs and drabs and pieces as the last week of the year progresses. This year, we're putting them all in one section, which we're pretty excited about. I think it's a really cool section. I was just looking at it yesterday, and I think people will really like it. It's something that they can keep and kind of look back on some of the really incredible images of 2013.
And Peter, what I thought was one of the most powerful images that come out of this last year was generated by Lexington Herald Leader photographer. It was a photograph of the dog, the police dog that belonged to the officer who was shot and killed in Bardstown, with the dog next to the officer's coffin. Such a moving, powerful photograph, and it really just captured that story in all its tragedy.
I agree with you. And I think that photo, in a lot of ways, which was taken by Jonathan Palmer and which we ran on the front page, it was contributed to that story being followed really internationally. I know that photograph really struck a nerve with people and got picked up by publications and television programs and websites all over the world. And I think that emotional reaction is one reason why that story resonated so far beyond the borders of Kentucky.
Peter, to what extent does the paper rely on reader input in ranking the top stories of the year?
Well, you know, that's one of the fun things. We've done it differently in past years. We're not really going to be ranking them this year, but as we're posting and printing those stories, we will really ask people on social media, particularly on Facebook and Twitter, what their top stories were, and we always take that into consideration. I think it's you know, there's no quote unquote official way to do this, and it's really just a fun way to discuss, you know, what are the top priorities for people who read the paper, and you know, it's always an interesting point for a party conversation, if you will.
Well, and that's one of the things we're going to do during the rest of this hour, invite our listeners to get on board with your response to the stories that we've talked about so far, ever so briefly, or stories that you think need to be talked about, that need to be considered among the top stories, maybe in your community. Of course, a lot of what we do is Lexington-focused. What about the stories in Hazard and in Corbin and in Pineville and all places in between? Give us a call at 800-621-8890. Send an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Again, that phone number, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and this program, near the end of the year, discussing the top 10 Kentucky news stories of 2013, as we invite you to chime in with your comments, your suggestions, what should be on the list, what among stories we've discussed so far really is not news to you, and you'd say, Dan, that's not in the top 10. Let us know by calling 800-621-8890. Or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and post there. And if you do so during the program, we will pass your message along to our listeners, and we can have a conversation among ourselves or among yourselves even after the program on the WEKU Facebook page. With us are Charles Compton and Stu Johnson of the WEKU News Department, and Peter Baniak, editor of the Lexington Herald Leader. And Stu, your reactions to what we have discussed so far and the stories that Charlie has listed out here, and Peter's comments.
Yeah, thank you, John. As I look at this list before me here, it covers a lot of ground, a lot of different issues, and you know, you just have a variety of thoughts on all of them. But one I will single out for me over the last year in covering Lexington City Hall has been the discussion about affordable housing, and with that comes homelessness. And although homelessness is an issue in Lexington, it's an issue in Kentucky, it's an issue in the country, it's an issue internationally. So I think that, but in Lexington's case, it's been kind of a struggle, because there's been an effort made to establish an affordable housing trust fund, which would be proposed to be funded with a tax on insurance premiums. And any time, of course, you mention tax, that causes some stir at City Hall. So that has not happened yet. And as we get set to enter 2014, it will resurface again. But the city and the Urban County Council are still wrestling a little bit with the establishment of an office and the mayor's office to coordinate services. There are, of course, a number of agencies and nonprofit organizations working to help the homeless, and sometimes that has created some issues in the community. So all of that is, I guess, a way of saying that that is a very pressing matter that will get a lot of attention still in 2014.
And Stu, from what I've come to know of you in these past couple of years since we've been colleagues here at WEKU, you're a people person. You're out there covering stories. You're covering things that could be maybe distant from our lives frequently, but I know you're frequently finding stories that are about people's lives and how people are affected in their own families, in their own communities, in their own organizations. Talk a little bit about your philosophy of covering stories that you've pursued over these 30 years or so.
Well, it's interesting because in talking to individuals, even with a microphone in front of their face, sometimes, you know, we have the impression that people might be a little bit hesitant about that. But I've found over all these years that if you just, you know, in the upfront say, we're just going to talk about this casually, that works, that goes a long way in terms of breaking down some of that tension. And when that happens, I think you the responses on all kinds of topics come that are you know, just genuine good reflections. So that I guess that is what I do enjoy about my work more than anything else in all these years, are talking to all kinds of people on all kinds of issues and all kinds of responses.
Let's go to the phones. We've invited our listeners to get on board with your comments, your suggestions, your reactions to the top stories of 2013. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You are welcome to send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. And on the line right now is Jane from Lexington. Jane, thanks for calling.
Hi there. Yeah, I was hoping that the folks there would comment on the Patriot Coal bankruptcy, where Peabody and Arch Coal have rolled their retirement plan into Patriot as a way to get rid of their responsibility to the miners. And I'm not sure where that case stands right now in bankruptcy court, so some of the reporters there probably will know a lot more about where that stands. And you know, just one more hammer to the Eastern Kentucky and the whole Appalachian coal region as far as jobs and any kind of life security there.
Well, perhaps Peter could add something, but my most recent memory of that story is that case is under appeal. Essentially what happened was you had a bankruptcy declaration, and a judge agreed that the pensions that were promised these miners during their working careers can be reworked, renegotiated, redone, and a lot of folks have lost their potentially will lose their pension, their livelihoods, what keeps food on the table in their old age. And it's part of a larger trend that we have seen in recent years where companies are not necessarily bound by the promises that they might have made 30 years ago or 20 years ago. I don't know, Peter, do you have any other recent memories about that?
No, that's pretty much where I think it is right now. I would say, though, that it, of course, fits into a larger narrative about you know, record numbers of job losses and right, frankly record declines in coal production in Kentucky and elsewhere right now, and just sort of an overall narrative about energy right now and the transition that's taking place both here and globally in terms of energy production.
Well, I find it fascinating because we're seeing both ends of it here in Kentucky, because of course coal in part is in trouble because of the glut of natural gas. Natural gas has become very plentiful. It's become cheap. Environmentally speaking, it's perceived as being less damaging than coal, and that's the result of all the fracking that's going on in the Northeast. And then we see the natural gas liquids that result from that potentially flowing through Kentucky through the Bluegrass Pipeline. So on one end, Kentucky is seeing a downturn in coal as a result of the natural gas boom. And the other side, Kentucky could potentially see some environmental impacts as a result of a byproduct of, mm-hmm. Of fracking.
I'm wondering to what extent a lot of our listeners would weigh in on the notion of a war on coal that has been publicized by the coal industry to a great extent and people who work in the coal industry, that the Obama administration has launched a war on coal and has been conducting this war since for the last 5 years, of course, during Obama's presidency. Jane, thank you so much for your call and for weighing in. We'll consider that a vote in favor of coal as a major story during the past year in general.
Yeah, thank you.
And natural gas, I mean, the fact of the matter is the economic pressures on coal are a lot greater than the governmental pressures. That's why you're seeing so many utilities switching over. The environmental regulations are important to them, and that's part of what they're responding to. But the fact of the matter is natural gas is cheaper and easier to transport than coal. You have less in the way you don't have to deal with coal ash and that sort of thing. So a lot of the pressure that we're seeing on coal in the Southeast is a result of a changing economy, the fact that there is a lot of natural gas out there.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie, as you mentioned that, I'm thinking, you know, just recently we had a story about the Kentucky Council of Churches expressing in a statement, or at least significant concern about the Bluegrass Pipeline, and just to make sure that you know that everything goes well in terms of establishing if a line goes in, oversight, the environmental, the health effects of potentially of water. So that is the trade-off concern. You
and
know?
What I find especially amusing about that is you have the pipeline company coming in and pretty much ready to talk about economics and environment and perhaps the law, but they're also in a theological debate. I don't know if they were able to get some theologians involved in this, because now they are going nose to nose with church organizations.
The sisters and the brothers in the Holy Land of Kentucky.
Yeah, near Bardstown, exactly. I mean, and it's become a question of the stewardship, that, in their opinions, the stewardship that God has entrusted his people with, that they've got to protect the land. And that's what, and so, you know, and I'm wondering how these companies are going to counter that kind of an argument. You know, you have environmental impact statements, but do you have theological impact statements?
Peter Baniak, to what extent do you see the pipeline story remaining a major story during 2014? And when are we going to see a resolution or, you know that it's actually going to move forward?
I think that's an excellent question. I think it definitely remains a story. You know, it's interesting when you look at a list like this of the top stories of 2013. I think a lot of these remain stories in 2014. You know, I think the continued transition of the coal economy is one, but I think the pipeline definitely continues as a big story in 2014. You know, there, of course, is the larger debate about this issue of eminent domain and whether the company that wants to put the pipeline through can use eminent domain. Is it a public use? Is it not? You know, they are still buying up the right-of-way, the land they need to put the pipeline and for those who don't know, is running basically from the areas that are rich with this kind of natural gas and fracking from those shale fields, if you will, to get it to Louisiana.
Northeastern Ohio and sections of West Virginia and Pennsylvania.
And so I think, you know, I think it very much remains an issue. I think it's an issue that'll play out in the courts. I think it's an issue that'll continue to play out with legislative debate, possibly. And I would expect to read lots more about the pipeline in the year to come.
800-621-8890 is our number. We're interested in your opinion of the top stories of 2013. Maybe you didn't hear the list we read earlier. That's okay. Call us and let us know what you think was the top story, top three. Give us a list of 10 if you like. You may email it to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or call us at 800-621-8890. And I'll tell you what, after this program, sometime, perhaps before the end of the day today, we'll post the results of our interaction both on the WEKU website, where we post the information about Eastern Standard, and put it on the Facebook page. as well. 800-621-8890. All right, marriage equality, gay rights. Is that going to continue as a major story in 2014? Where are we going?
I perceive, and feel free to disagree, that that Supreme Court ruling that we got earlier this year that said that states have the right to allow same-sex marriage, and essentially that was a real bellwether time. It was a real turning point time, and we're going to continue to see the repercussions here in Kentucky. I think the fairness ordinance is picking up momentum. It's passed in Frankfort, it's passed in Vico, in southeast Kentucky, and in Moorhead. And if it can pass in places like that, it will certainly it can be passed in many other places. That's almost an economic issue in a sense. So you're going to see that. Then, you know, the state's going to have to figure out what it's going to do, how it's going to treat same-sex marriages that have taken place outside of Kentucky. For example, there was the case in Louisville where a same-sex couple married, one was being asked to testify against the other in court. Well, of course, your spouse doesn't have to testify against you if your spouse doesn't want to. And that's a time-honored. So the state of Kentucky might have to recognize the union in that sense. And there's the issue out of Cincinnati where a same-sex couple, married couple, were trying to decide how to best handle the death of one of the partners, the legalities, should the name show up on the birth certificate, I'm sorry, on the death certificate as well. So there's going to be all this movement on sort of the fringes of the issue. You have more and more states accepting it, and it's just can continue to grow here in the state until finally, I don't know how many years Kentucky will eventually recognize same-sex marriages.
Mm-hmm. In Lexington, they most recently the domestic partner benefits issue came up and started to say debate, but debate would probably be too strong a word because it passed easily with very little discussion, whereas compared to a decade ago, there was an effort made by then-Mayor Teresa Isaac to implement domestic partner benefits. It was rejected by the council. It just didn't happen. Whereas today, it was proposed, brought up, put in committee, went to the full council. The vote was, if not unanimous, I'm pretty sure it was unanimous. And
I think you're right.
I think so. And so it just went on through just like that. So that just shows a change of the times.
It's an economic issue as well. They say that it's important in order to compete for good employees. This is a benefit. This is a perk that a university, a city can offer that will attract top employees. That was an argument Mayor Jim Gray made repeatedly as well.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
And I think, Stu, I agree with you. I think it is really telling about sort of the difference in that debate 10 years ago when it first came up versus now. When it was, I think you could have legitimately called it a debate 10 years ago, and it was something that was much discussed, much debated, and this time, this year in 2013, it really passed without much debate and sailed through for all intents and purposes. I also think, and Charlie, you mentioned this, I think the fairness ordinance vote in Vico was one that, again, not just a big story in Kentucky, but a story that generated widespread national attention, everything from the New York Times to the Colbert Report on Comedy Central. So I think that was also seen as a very telling sign about, a place that maybe some would consider to be unexpected passing a fairness ordinance.
I wonder how some of our listeners, residents of Kentucky in general, react to that focus of a program such as the Colbert Report of making this an issue. And did it shed a negative light on Kentucky or a positive light on Kentucky? And to what extent was even that reporting and that spotlight a major story in 2013? 800-621-8890, our number. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking the top stories of 2013. Email weeku easternstandard @gmail.com. Again, that phone number, 800-621-8890.
You know, I'll tell you a story that I think was really overrated. Now, you might get some disagreement at this table about this, was the whole debate over hemp, or over industrial hemp here in the state. All the state of Kentucky did said, if the federal government legalizes it, then we'll be ready to regulate a hemp industry here in the state. That's what was the real debate, continues to be on the federal level, and it faces very significant opposition from Southeast Kentucky Congressman Hal Rogers, whose district is just having all kinds of problems with prescription drug abuse, heroin abuse. He's very conscious of the fact that hemp is tied in very closely to drug abuse. There's a lot of arguments to say they're very separate issues, but it continues to concern police officers who have to enforce the state's drug laws. So that battle's about to be fought out on the federal level, and all the press that it got here in the state over the last year, I think, was a little bit overblown.
And, Peter, you made this point about a number of these issues. This is another one that spills over into 2014. With Ag Commissioner Jamie Comer running for governor, that will still be brought up a few times.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're due for another break, and we want to encourage you to get on the line at 800-621-8890. Your opinion, your suggestion for stories that were the major stories of the year 2013. What affected your community? Maybe you're not in Lexington, in the urban area, and some of these issues are really not that important to you. But what is more important to you? 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Of course, you may remain anonymous when you call in to 800-621-8890. Our program continues on the WEKU stations. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. 800-621-8890 is the number. You are welcome to call. Let us know what you think was the top story or a number of top stories of 2013. What do you think a big deal was made of that really is not that big a deal? 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Our guests are Peter Baniak, editor of the Lexington Herald Leader, Stu Johnson, reporter, producer for WEKU for almost 30 years now. Big anniversary coming up here in the next year. And Charles Compton, news director for WEKU. 800-621-8890. Folks, in the last few moments, we're talking about hemp and this major crop and its potential impact on Kentucky's economy. I didn't hear the word tobacco at all. What happened?
Well, I mean, one of the big stories that came out of this last year regarding tobacco is the state is potentially going to lose the money that it got from the tobacco settlement, and that money was used over the last 10 years to diversify crops. I mean, I live in Bath County. All of a sudden, you saw fences going up and cows roaming around and people switching crops, and that was all done with tobacco settlement money. Well, now because the state is appealing this, an alleged misdeed by the state, it potentially could lose that what tobacco settlement money is left, and the state will be left scrambling either to find new funds for that or to just cancel some of these programs.
Mm-hmm. And just recently, they had the annual ag report out of the Farm Bureau, I believe, convention in Louisville, and tobacco didn't get too much attention, but it surely did in terms of receipts for ag this last year, which were a record for the second year in a row because of things like beef cattle and grain and corn and, you know, not having much better weather this year. So the ag business industry is doing well. Tobacco is still a part of it. There's always, of course, the mention made that tobacco is not is faded to a great degree in terms of the amount, but it's still there and still, you know, it's a part of the industry for sure.
You know, one thing that I would just throw out there is a little bit of a different direction, but we've talked about coal and the reference to tobacco, some kind of traditional industries, if you will, that may be struggling economically. There are, and I know that you all had the automotive industry on your list. In terms of ones that are doing well in Kentucky, I think is an interesting story as well, and the automotive industry is clearly one, the recovery there, but I would also say one that we've written quite a bit about in the last year is the boom in the bourbon industry, in Kentucky bourbon, which I think is a fascinating story that you're seeing play out right now in terms of, you know, distilleries in the state expanding and adding, you know, visitor centers and adding capacity, and the whole tourism outreach of things like the Kentucky Bourbon Trail and that boom there, I think, has been a fascinating and ongoing storyline for both the image of the state and the economy of the state. And, you know, I think the automotive industry is also a very interesting storyline as well.
This is Eastern Standard. We are inviting, as always, our listeners to participate in the program, and we're discussing the top stories of 2013. Let's talk now with Chris from Lexington. Chris, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I want to talk about the cultural issues in Lexington and how that affects the state in lack of doing anything about it by either the state legislature or the city of Lexington. There's tens of millions of dollars have been spent on a cultural center since 1989, and it's still not finished. We have a cultural it's more, instead of a cultural center, what we have is cultural segregation. We have a Lyric Theater, we have a Downtown Arts Center, the courthouse, and other places. But tens of millions of dollars, the third floor, the fourth floor, are not finished on the Downtown Arts Center since 1989. And unfortunately, the Herald Leader has not been in the lead and holding the government to their task and being responsible and helping the government be more accountable with their spending of all this money. It's an incredible amount of money, and it's been turned into a courthouse. It's been turned upside down, and unfortunately, the Herald Leader has lost the lead and really a lot of credibility with various issues downtown and supporting one disastrous decision after another, and mostly and a lot of times simply by ignoring it. If it's out of sight, it's out of mind. It's not worth the Herald Leader's time to write about it. Unfortunately, that's not good for a community newspaper.
Chris, thanks for those comments. Let's hear from, of course, Peter Baniak, editor of the Herald Leader.
Well, sure. I think what the caller is referencing is a story that largely played out in the 90s that, frankly, I covered extensively when I was the City Hall reporter, and that is the legal settlement between the state and the city over the what was then known as the Ben Snyder Block and plans for a cultural center, and that settlement called for the money to be ultimately not put into one single cultural center, but to be spread around to a variety of arts organizations, arts and cultural organizations. We have written extensively, the Herald Leader has, through over, you know, I would say the past decade and a half about the outcome of that case. And you know, we remain dedicated to covering the arts and cultural activities pretty extensively. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, in terms of that story, I think it's definitely an interesting story. It's one that we've kept an eye on over the last 15 years.
Chris, thank you for your call to Eastern Standard at 800-621-8890. On the topic of coal, continuing that topic, and job loss in Eastern Kentucky, we have Aaron from Paintsville. Aaron, thanks for calling. Go right ahead. Are you there, Aaron? Nope. No, he's not there. Okay. How about Don from Lexington? Let's see what is on Don's mind this week. Thanks for calling, Don.
Yes, I wasn't talking about coal, but I'm over in Frankfort because of coal every week and every day during session, which is only Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday that they work. And that's a misnomer for the legislature to get paid and somewhat fraudulent. But, you know, in reference to the fairness ordinance in Kentucky, the real issue is that they passed the freedom of religion bill, and just recently there's been the story of Sunrise Children's Services actually forcing the director out because he wanted to put in a resolution of that to employ gays, and they virtually will use religion to discriminate against gays in employment and also indoctrinate the kids that are in those facilities. And that's really disturbing to me that we actually finance, I think they get $26 million of their $27 million budget from the federal and state government. And so we're financing as a state discrimination. And that really is distressing and disturbing to me, though I'm in Frankfort a lot and I see a lot more of the corruption that is so pervasive in Kentucky, but I see it at the local level too.
All right, Don, thank you so much. We appreciate your input on that very important issue. And we are discussing the top stories of 2013 on Eastern Standard. There's still time for you to weigh in with your suggestions, your comments on any of the issues that have come up. 800-621-8890. Send an email to WEKU Eastern Standard. And of course, any lists or substantive comments that we receive by email, even after the show, we will post on the Facebook page, certainly, and maybe even on the WEKU website with our listing for this week's Eastern Standard. Stu Johnson, Charles Compton, Peter Baniak are my guests for this week's program. As we talk about issues such as the decline in the tobacco industry, the decline in the coal industry. Okay, the bourbon industry remains healthy. We're talking about changes in terms of human rights, of fairness, and gay rights. What I hear is Kentucky's changing.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is evolving, and it's a constantly changing, dynamic place. I've always kind of been impressed by the polarity of Kentucky. I mean, you have dry counties, yet you have a booming bourbon industry. You have a debate over casinos, yet plenty of gambling takes place at Churchill Downs. It's a fascinating place. What I think is really going to be interesting here in the coming couple of years is what happens with health care reform. We had a Medicaid expansion here this last year. We had the establishment of the health exchange. Kentucky got lots of positive press because it sort of got ahead of that, and it had a website that actually worked, unlike its federal counterpart as well. And so Kentucky was almost breaking trail on this issue, but it is all built upon executive orders that were issued by the governor, which means the next governor could reverse it. And I know that's what a lot of opponents, critics are hoping for, that that there be a reversal of that executive order and essentially an attempt to sort of put that genie back in the bottle as well. Now, you know, whether they'll be able to do that or not remains to be seen. But you know, for example, Senate Republicans are saying they need to have a bigger say over how the exchange is run, how Medicaid is expanded, because they're going to have to figure out a way to pay for it. And right now the governor has gotten around them, but that's, you know, not indefinite.
So are you saying this could be a matter of smoke and mirrors, that the Connect system looks stronger and healthier than it actually is?
I think in terms of the signing up, the enrollment has gone well. And Charlie, what you're mentioning, Julie Denton, who is the Health and Welfare Senate Health and Welfare Committee chair, brought this point up that, yes, the GOP members, many were not at all pleased. The governor went off and did this on, they felt like, the GOP members thought that they should have had more the legislative say. So that very likely will come up again here in this upcoming session. There will be efforts made one way or the other. Whether they be successful, that's a big question mark, as you say, because it's got so much momentum to a point.
Well, and I think at this point, you know, I'm glad you all put that one on your list. I think that is another one of those stories that resonated far beyond the borders of Kentucky, and I think really generated some very, very positive national press, as mostly because of the contrast at a time when the federal website was really, really struggling, and there was sort of this constant drumbeat of stories about that. There was always the but. But in Kentucky, things seemed to be going better, which I think was an interesting, another interesting storyline that played out both here in the state that we, the state media covered extensively, but so did the national media.
What I always find interesting, Peter, is that but in Kentucky, but in Appalachia, but in eastern Kentucky, it seems to be that whenever Kentucky shows up in the national media, it's sort of like, well, if they can do it in Kentucky, we could certainly be doing it, you know, that kind of thing. And I always kind of enjoy that. Yeah, we can do things right, too.
The success of the health healthcare system so far has been, to all indications, a very positive light for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We want to try to kind of create our top 10 list, or at least some the top three, but let's acknowledge an email from Rebecca, who writes with big stories, and she really is focusing on international, national, but there's one Kentucky story, certainly. She talks about, number one, China's muscle flexing in South China Sea bodes that the U.S. will be facing a pushy and formidable power in coming decades. Number two, shutdown of NASA shuttle and rise of private spaceflight like Branson's Virgin Galactic. Number three, Obamacare web fiasco, which of course has its connections to Kentucky. And four, coal isn't being picked on by the EPA. Its time has passed. Like the buggy whip, it can't compete in a changing business, economic, and technological environment. Let's thank you, Rebecca, for that list. Let's get one more caller on the line, and then we're going to work toward prioritizing some of these stories. On the line is Terry from Hazard. Terry, thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to comment on it. Seems to me the lack of remembering our history when it comes to the coal industry. I find now that all employees are company men, and they may have even had ancestors who fought and died in the strikes against the coal companies for better working conditions and that type of thing. And you never hear about that anymore. It's like coal is king, can do no wrong. But I'm old enough to remember those things. And it just really is upsetting to me that people don't seem to have anything bad to say about the industry in spite of the history of the industry here in Eastern Kentucky.
Gentlemen, do you agree with Terry in terms of the lack of coverage of and the reporting on the history?
Well, there's plenty of stories about the history, but I think what we're seeing is that that the miners and the company executives have created almost a united front, and that is concerned about their jobs. Jobs are number one. In the past, there were differences over proper compensation, fair treatment of miners, where now they have a common enemy, and that is the EPA. And again, these aren't my words, but it's perceived that. But what I'm sort of surprised is that they haven't focused so much on competing with natural gas.
Terry, thank you for bringing up that issue. We're going to need to move on and wrap up.
I agree 100%. Natural gas is what's killed coal. But we've always known it was going to go at some point, but we've done nothing to prepare for that.
Thank you. Thank you for your call, Terry. We're grateful to you and all the listeners who've participated in this week's show. Gentlemen, Charles Compton, Stu Johnson, and Peter Baniak, with 3 minutes remaining in our program, how can we come up with a top three? Any ideas, Charlie, on how we could?
I've got my top three, and we can work on it.
Let's just do it that way.
Well, I think that the health reforms in Kentucky that have been implemented, and a continued debate on that, that's in my top three. Like I said earlier, I find that the growing popularity for the fairness ordinance and debates over domestic partner benefits and same-sex marriage, I think that belongs in my top three. That indicates a real change in our society. And again, coal's decline and the environmental and economic impacts, how Kentucky responds to that, another story that's ongoing.
Stu Johnson.
Well, I'll just tag on, and I'm going to chime in, Charlie, here. But and Peter mentioned this earlier also about the SOAR conference in Eastern Kentucky recently. And you know, that's not all, a lot of the focus was on coal, but not solely, because there are the other economic and social issues that there are hopes. There are always hopes that that strides can be made in terms of some of those issues, in terms of drug issues and the social matters that have plagued Eastern Kentucky to a point. And so there's trying to meet some optimism there, and that'll be a big factor as well as to if that can move, if there can be some changes in those directions.
Peter Baniak, your top three.
I think Charlie has a pretty strong three. The one that I would probably add somewhere to his list, although I can't really tell you for sure which one I would take away. So that's not very helpful. And we haven't really talked about this much, but I think politics in Kentucky.
The Senate race.
There have been some amazing political stories that have really been kicking up in 2013 that are going to continue into 2014 and possibly beyond. And And those include everything. Those include the U.S. Senate race, which has really started to crank here in the last, 4 or 5 months, and is going to be a huge story throughout 2014. But also, the emergent, dabbling in a potential presidential campaign for Rand Paul. That to me sort of fits. Every time you turned around, Kentucky was once again on the national political landscape, the national political radar, because of some of the players that we have right now, both on the state scene and the national scene. And I think that was a fascinating story in 2013, and it's going to continue to be in 2014.
Peter Baniak, editor of the Lexington Herald Leader, Stu Johnson, reporter, producer for WEKU, Charles Compton, news director at WEKU. Gentlemen, it's been fun. Let's do this again next year.
Absolutely.
Thank you to our listeners for participating in this week's discussion on Eastern Standard. We invite you to tune in. We do have special programs for you, special Eastern Standard programs in the next couple of weeks, and we will come back with live discussions. We're going to talk about Connect, as a matter of fact, early in the new year, in January. We want to thank our guests. We want to thank our associate producers, Andrew Moorhead and Richard Turner, for all the great work they've done this year, as well as our technical director and backup host, Jonies Franklin. This program will be available as a podcast later today, and we'll repeat Sunday evening at 6. I'm John Hingsbergen for Eastern Standard.